Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, before we get into the podcast, I just wanted to acknowledge some events that took place late last week that have had a direct impact on the folks here at Waypoint. We unfortunately had layoffs come through Vice that impacted Gita Jackson, who's been a regular contributor to Waypoint, someone I've known for a very long time. Shout outs to the Match 3 podcast that I used to do with Gita years back when we both lived in Chicago. And Rachel Pick, who has been is formerly the audience development manager for both Waypoint and Motherboard, and has been someone who's been incredibly invaluable in doing a lot of behind the scenes work to make things like Waypoint Plus work as well as it does. We are going to miss both of them dearly. We wish them both well in finding extremely good landing spots. Any place would be thankful to have Gita or Rachel on their teams. Obviously, this sort of threw off the original plan we had for the podcast, which was supposed to be anime-filled, watching Chainsaw Man, watching Gundam. It just didn't feel appropriate right after to just jump into that. Maybe we'll find a way to revisit those in the future, either later this month or down the line. So apologies if you're looking forward to that episode of the podcast. And our thanks to all the contributions from both Gita and Rachel over their time in which we've had a chance to work together. All right, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 515 of Waypoint Radio. I am your host, Patrick Klupik. I am your host, not Rob Zachney. Rob is hanging out with his parents. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Who could say? But he's doing it, and we're proud of him. Kato, you said something cursed right before we started the podcast, and you might not want to repeat it. Maybe you just thought it'd be a fun thing to say before the recording officially started.
Okay.
But I think you need to. Oh well. All
right. Right.
Well, oh, okay.
Blizzard. Yes. Blizzard made this bed. I'm just exposing the bed.
Right. They made this. They made this bed. Now they have to shit in it.
Yeah. 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 No, we've talked about this before, but they said that gilfs are in.
We talked about this before.
I feel like we must have.
Zap this. Oh yeah, yeah. Top of the news stack is always like, oh, right. I got my Google alert for GILFs plus video games, and I finally got a match on it.
Finally got.
I've been waiting 5 years for this Google alert to hit.
Top Activision Blizzard story: when a different state organization interferes with a federal court case. Number one, number two, GILFs are in.
GILFs are in, baby.
Wait, was this just the, like because they added the? This is me pulling from deep in the memory bank. But they added an older lady to Overwatch at some point, and is but they made her too attractive. Attractive enough. I don't know. Now I feel like I'm digging myself a hole. All the grandmas listening to Waypoint Radio about to write in and accuse me of being ageist. I'm sorry.
It was kind of a sideways dig at the they released their like analytic tool that like they use end to be like how diverse is our like roster.
She's trying to turn diversity into a math equation.
Yeah, and like one of them was like there was like a age thing in there or whatever about.
Okay, all right.
One of their older characters, Anna, who people have unironically called a GILF in other ways when she like released back in the day, but like
sure, but the you know
there was data behind it.
The internet has no bounds. I could believe anything you would tell me.
So apparently there was like new news to that as well. I don't know if you saw. I think that was right around when 2 was releasing. There was even more data released at some point, but it didn't make as big of a splash as the first time around. Of just like, here's our weird way we quantify diversity. Here's more numbers.
Well, maybe that'll be part of the, you know, addressing Overwatch 2 is add more GILFs. fix the battle pass. You know, you're just coming up your tiers of fixes. Right. This you saying that broke my brain enough that I didn't properly introduce everyone. I'm Patrick Klepek. You are Ricardo Contreras, I suppose.
Yes, I am.
Thanks. We're also joined by Renata Price.
I am the anti-GILF.
I'm hearing.
No, I'm not anti-GILFs.
Yeah, all right. Well, now two of us are going to be canceled for being ageist. We're just, Kato's going to have to do an incredible amount of editing to get us uncanceled on
that's
this.
Staying there.
Okay. Well, that's fine. I wrote out worse. But I'm hearing, actually, we are also joined by a special guest this morning, one Chris Pratt. Are you on the line?
Yahoo, God. Let's go.
Here we come.
I don't like how you said that. Like coming off the context on Ren, what you just wrote is get the fuck.
Jesus Christ, Ren.
I'm not even gonna read it. Now I'm gonna address it. You can just reader, listener, you can just imagine what sort of cursed knowledge Ren put in the chat. The Chris Pratt part of the Mario trailer, which dropped last week at New York Comic Con, is our first look at the movie, which comes out in April, I think, is the new release date for that film.
Yes. Because it's going to be a fucking joke.
I think the movie's actually going to be pretty good.
I don't actually know what date it is. I was making a joke about
it. I don't think it's April 1st.
Yeah.
Feel like that's probably not the case. They showed a short trailer, you know, opens with Bowser, played by Jack Black. I guess he's collecting power stars, you know, and he goes and finds the penguins that we all murdered from Super Mario 64, enslaves them, takes their power star. And we can also get a brief introduction to Chris Pratt's Mario. All told, I Illumination is I have seen all the Illumination movies. Many, 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 many times. The thing about Illumination as a studio is they have a very high floor and a very low ceiling, which is to say the animation films they make are incredibly competent and completely fine for a parent to get through many times and not feel deeply upset about themselves.
Hey, Patrick.
But rarely do they rise to the ceiling of a Pixar. I think the first Despicable Me is like legitimately
great. How do you feel about Bananas?
We're talking about Minions here?
Yeah. You've seen every single Minion movie?
The fact that you're acting credulous betrays your knowledge of how parenthood works.
Most of the Minion movies. I'm not even a parent, and like as a youth I had to be exposed to them by just like cultural osmosis.
Yeah, you couldn't ignore them. And if anything, what's funny is that for all the discourse around could you do the Mario voice like that's featured in the video game and make that tolerable for 90 minutes to 2 hours? The studio that is making the Mario film has shown that you can have nonsense voice acting for a huge chunk of the film. And not only does it work, it will become a cultural phenomenon. Like, go listen to the Minions. They are like rare dialogue N64 era nonsense. Now, granted, they talk for the entirety of the film, but nonetheless, it does prove that I don't know that.
They didn't talk for the entirety. I've never seen the Minions film, the one that's just Minions.
The Minions films, they do talk. They are more predominant talkers, but still those films still anchor themselves around
people,
human characters that are speaking around them. But they do talk a lot. I don't know what the proportion is. I'm sure someone has crunched the numbers. I'm sure there's a TikTok that could explain to me the ratio of dialogue of humans to dialogue of Minions in those. But it was all to say, like, the way people were talking about Disaster for this film was just like Illumination just doesn't do like their worst, like Secret Life of Pets 2, which is a deeply mediocre movie, is fine. Like, it's fine. Like,
it's
so there's
only
just
mediocre.
No way for me to not imagine this movie wouldn't look fine. And I actually think like the Jack Black stuff looks fucking awesome. Like, I actually cannot wait to see his performance as that character.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that. I really liked Jack Black's take on Bowser. I like, honestly, the whole Koopa section in the beginning.
Yeah, it's
I was
good.
Like, yeah, this is great. And then cuts to Mario, and I was like, ah, damn, this is going to be what this is, huh? I think that Wreck-It Ralph has done incalculable damage to the animation industry. I cannot.
Why?
I hate the way Mario looks at this.
I hate the style. His head is squished.
His head is squished. He's got no ass.
I'm confused why you lay this at the feet of Wreck-It Ralph, though.
That movie.
I had video game character. I feel like the video game characters in that movie looks like the video game counterparts.
Yeah, they did. Those were like pretty. Like if you were to imagine how that transfers to like a CG film, I thought like they did a pretty on point.
No, they did
job with those.
They did for the video game characters from real shit. It was everything. There are other ways of imagining what like digital spaces and like 3D characters look like. That Mario would be totally at home in the Wreck-It Ralph art style. Of the like non-video game characters, right. Yes, I think this has to tie into it.
Like, you know, there's the line from Pratt, you know, Mario, and where he's like, "Where is this?" And I think we are absolutely staring down the barrel of a meta story, which is unfortunate.
It's an isekai.
Yeah, shout outs to the Washington Post to getting that on their main account.
Really,
shout out to Gene Park. Yeah, did you not see this?
No, I missed it. That's funny.
Washington Post's launcher reporter, writer.
Do they have Gene Park, man. You know that Twitter account that's like first time in the Gray Lady or whatever? It's like the first time a word is used in the New York Times. Mm-hmm, do they have the same thing for the Washington Post?
I don't think so. I think it is not treated the same way. Yeah. But they did get the Washington Post was tweeting that on Main in a way that was delightful. But yeah, my presumption is this is a like, and it's probably partially maybe explains why the character looks, you know, not like quite one to one with the video game version of Mario that has been pretty. I mean, like the current 3D rendered Mario looks pretty great and feels like you could plop that into a world just fine. But
so what you're saying is that this Mario is the pre-mushrooms Mario. He's not on the shrooms yet.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay. I don't know how the Mario lore works. So like, I don't know how that tracks exactly. People can write in and let me know exactly. I don't know what the origin story of Mario actually
Psilocybin actually makes you look younger and more vibrant.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, I mean, I think that movie's gonna be fine. That movie actually might be great, and I think Pratt is gonna be grating. But it will be the rest of the, I think the rest of the movie will probably be pretty enjoyable. The one thing that was kind of sort of interesting was watching the different the trailers in different languages, right? So specifically, the one I think it was the French or the Italian one. But like, well, how are they going to approach doing their voice acting? And they did not approach it like specifically the line of. Let's go. What does he say? What does he say? As he's
here we come.
Yeah.
That famous Mario.
The one I saw, I think it was the French one that like added a little, you know, flourish to the voice, which is like, hey, you know, there's a way that you can do this that adds a little bit of what you remember. I will not be shocked if to some degree that is addressed between this trailer and the next. Voice acting can be patched. That is something that like I would imagine the second trailer will like specifically try to address this point with people with Chris. I don't know. Do people want that? Do they want Chris Pratt giving this a shot? I don't know if that's what they really want. Like given the two scenarios, Pratt just doing Pratt voice or Pratt making a valiant attempt, maybe not valiant, but an attempt at Charles Marinette. Is that what we want? Do we want door B to be opened?
I do because I feel like that's the most chaotic option.
That's true. That is the most chaotic option. You're right.
I want Dorby open very badly. Also, I just did look up the French trailer I've listened to. This motherfucker's doing a full Mario voice on some of these. He goes,
yeah,
no, but it's good.
Yes.
Like, yes. No. I agree, bro.
I do.
You know what? Yeah, here we do come.
I just don't like the inflection on...
Look. That's what he says. Here we come.
I'm aware. I'm aware. I should say I've already broken the order of this podcast and a thing I meant to do. I was going to try and finally break what we have done in the past, which is promoting a thing that we're doing all the way at the end of the podcast, and then Kato has to edit it out.
We were supposed to start
and then put it at the front. Yes, we didn't, but now it's so close to the front that you can't edit it out.
Yeah.
But you could put the promo that we're gonna do.
There'll be another promo. They'll have heard something, probably.
We are bringing back Save Point next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're going to be doing 3 days of all day and some nighttime, but not overnight. We're still figuring out exactly what we're going to be doing during the evening hours. I regret to inform people up front, we are not going to be able to watch the Twilight movies. We are not going to be able to continue our adventure because Amazon has taken them down. And the way this works is that we stream it through Twitch. And yes, could we put it on a Blu-ray and watch it? Like, it wouldn't be as fun. The whole fun is that it's embedded. And so we are going to be taking a bigger dip into Amazon Video's library, which if you've ever done before, oh boy. It's a big old trash pile in there. There's some good stuff, but we're going to be going places based on how that goes.
Less of a dip, more of a steep.
Yeah, we're going to be we'll be swimming down there. Oh, and we'll see God. What we find. But yeah, all of us are going to be in New York. Natalie is going to join us, and hopefully we'll have some guests. We're still finalizing exactly how that is all going to work out, but we're going to be doing lots of stuff, playing the quarry, playing... What are other things that we're doing that I can safely say won't change between
between now and then?
Now.
We're and only then. A week out. Why does this keep happening to us?
Well, I need to do a final sweep because now I want to... Yeah, it's mostly finalized, but I've had some ideas I want to get in. We'll be playing a board game. Kato, we need to figure out what that
a
is.
A board game. That is some board game.
That is one of the things that we need to finalize that is contingent on a couple of things coming together. There'll be some tactics. There'll be some... Might be some Wii Sports Golf, you know? Might be ranking the hottest monsters. Who would want to do that? If you'd like to tune in for that, that'll be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We will be starting streaming around 10 Eastern, going till around 6 o'clock Eastern. And then, like I said, doing some stuff at night. That'll be at twitch.tv/waypoint. And everyone is going to start gathering in New York. Rob will be out there, I think, on Sunday. I'll be out there on Tuesday morning. So I'm very excited for all the shenanigans we're going to get up to on SafePoint. So please mark that in your calendar. Get ready for that. And we'll be hitting you up with more of that, teasing some more details about segments and things like that as we fully lock down that. But Kato, you ventured out into the great world of not playing games in a house or an apartment, like going to a place.
I went to a
where
place.
A video game company says... Here's a video game that's not out. Would you like to play it? I don't know what that feels like anymore. I have not experienced that in many, many, literally, I was going to jokingly say many a year, but it is true. Many a year at this point, as we are, two and a half years into COVID. I have not gone anywhere to do anything formally like this. But you went to a Square Enix event where you got to play a handful of games, including Forspoken and Crisis Core, the Crisis Core remaster. I don't know, which one do you want to try drop us on first?
We can very quickly hit Crisis Core because I actually I've never played. Did you play the original?
I did. The PSP one. Crisis Core was a PSP Final Fantasy VII spinoff. It came out around the time of, there's been two great arcs of Square trying to turn Final Fantasy VII into its own property. Mm-hmm. One of those was around the time of the release of Advent Children, the animated Final Fantasy VII movie, which I've never seen.
What was that?
Because it didn't look very good. But I know people quite like it. and then they put out things like Crisis Core, I think some other stuff. I can't remember exactly what was all part of that Final Fantasy VII sort of celebration. But that was sort of the last time Square Enix was like, yes, we're going to turn this into its own property, separate from Final Fantasy's own continuum. And then, obviously we have the series of remakes that are occurring, and now it has them revisiting. Crisis Core, which is a game that all I remember about it was that it had a really cool battle system, the specifics of which I could not tell you about.
Damn it.
Anymore.
This is what I was wondering. Because they said it's not a remake, it's a remaster. And I wondered how closely the battle system hewed to the original. Because it does.
Isn't there there's a gambling system or numbers?
That one's specific. The real thing that I was curious about is whether or not it was turn-based or similar to Final Fantasy VII Remake. Because this one is similar to Final Fantasy VII Remake in that you're walking around and attacking in real time.
I think that was true. I think that was true of the original game.
Okay. So like, and like the special system is like, yeah, there's like a roulette in the top left corner. And every time you cast, I believe it's when you hit a cast spell or special ability, one of the three roulette like things stops. And then depending on what combination of like numbers you get, a special ability will trigger. And
how much, so you have no control over those numbers? That is just sort of like once that triggers, then it's almost like surfacing. It's surfacing the RNG basically, and like allowing kind of gamifying. Well, you know, things that are happening behind the scenes are happening in front of the player. But can you manipulate it to some degree as a result? I guess you could get the timing.
Yeah, I think if anything, you might be able. It's they're spinning pretty fast. I don't actually know if the
I'm looking at this now. This is really fast.
It's really fucking fast. Be able to. I don't think it's really manipulatable.
Oh, I see. It's like this person just drew three Sephiroths.
Right.
665. And then, so is that what triggers an attack? Is actually like the silhouettes that are, like lock into place?
Once they lock into place, something happens. And the most common one that I kept getting was no MP cost. Like, and so like for 20 seconds or whatever, all of my spells were free. So then I start, instead of using my like regular attacks, I would be like, okay, now's the time to kind of go all in on magic and try to figure out how to best use this new ability. And sometimes you have another bar that's called like action points or whatever that does like special moves. And it's like, you can build that. It has a similar thing where it's like, now you've got no AP costs. Like, keep spamming your special moves and all that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's like a limit break type thing if you get, I think, like 3 sevens or something. But most of the time it's more like you're balancing because spells have a cast time. They're kind of harder to use in like this real time sense where you have to time them really well or else you're going to get smacked in the face for using a spell. But you want to try to get one of those special abilities rolling and then like react to whichever one you get and keep going forward. So it's an interesting little twist on the like
kind of a randomized element to combat that otherwise you might be following into
especially
sort of predictable patterns.
Especially because this one is unlike Final Fantasy VII Remake, you only play one character, right? In Remake, mm-hmm. you had at least you could like set someone up as a caster and you can have them do all the magic and then have Cloud attacking with his big sword and all that. Like you can kind of, and bouncing between the different characters you had out was really fun. This one,
you're playing as Zack in this one.
Yeah.
Right. Who is like a soldier in Cloud's unit. And if you have played, I won't spoil it here, but if you have,
we won't spoil first, Final Fantasy VII.
the remake that like, because it is choosing to do with
that's
the timeline.
That's an important distinction, Kato.
Yes. Like what it is, like there is a really important thing that happens related to this character in the remake that totally changes how a lot of things can play can play out. And so, I'll be curious if any of that bleeds. Did they say anything about like whether when they say remaster, is that them also distancing from, hey, none of the storytelling stuff that we're doing there is bleeding out into this.
Yeah, I believe that's exactly what
they said that specifically.
They didn't say that specifically. Okay. They were just like, you know, we're using remaster because we haven't changed. It's not as changed as like something like Final Fantasy VII Remake. Remake means a specific thing now because of Final Fantasy VII Remake. So no, this is just a remaster. But essentially the original was a prequel to VII. So in theory, this will still lead into the events of VII in some way, but like we'll see. I don't actually know where that game ends as far as like how closely adheres to
where Crisis Core where that links in, but I guess I wouldn't be shocked if there was, if the main game didn't change anything, but that, you know, oh, and then there's a cutscene at the very end that links in, given that we should be hearing more about that that second installment of Final Fantasy VII next year. When does this come out?
Soon, I believe. Crisis Core
December 13th.
Master.
Yeah, so before the end of the year.
And it like part of the way you can kind of tell it was a remaster too is the cutscenes. A lot of the cutscenes that I saw were very like, oh, this is very obviously made for a different like for a handheld situation, yeah, right. But they just replaced the models and the environments with higher res models, right? But like they didn't actually change. It feels very, this is a handheld game that we've blown up.
Yeah, the way the mouse are flapping feels of its era. Yeah. As opposed to you know, like gone back in and re-rigged the
totally
the animation. I do think I was reading a couple stories and looking at some videos of this while you were talking, and I guess they have changed the voice actor. Okay. Is one notable change from a right. nostalgia perspective. People have some strong feelings in the YouTube comments of this IGN video about the original voice actor. I played this because people praised the unique approach to the combat. Like, right. even though I liked Final Fantasy VII, but didn't feel the need to watch Advent Children. Like, I was like, I'm good. Like, I don't necessarily need 100 stories in this universe. There's also my Final Fantasy VIII standing, talking, my like just bitterness over getting none of that for the one that was my favorite. I am, you know, it's hard for me to imagine like carving out the time to completely play this all over again, although it will drop at a time when like be heading towards a break.
Right.
But I have very fond memories of this combat system, like just feeling wholly unique.
Yeah.
It's like weird to say, love to have gambling in my video game, but there's something actually kind of quaint and cute about the fact that it's taking, you know, for folks like myself who like occasionally like to do like mild forms of gambling that don't turn into a problem. Like, part of the fun is the risk, right? Is like, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And so what video games have done is monetize that in a way that is extremely gross and exploitative and preys upon people who do not have the same sort of self-control. But what is cool, what was always cool about this here was like, yeah, but like the unknown is inherently interesting, and throwing that into a pseudo, you know, real-time action game was really fun at the time.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been anything like it since. I cannot, nothing comes to mind that even approaches what they were trying to do there. I'm sure that is now just queuing up people to write in and
be like, actually, hey, that did it. Yeah.
Excuse like actually having me. The numbers surface where literally you're watching like yeah. a machine rumble through the numbers and it's like, ding, like Sephiroth attack.
Yeah.
The other game you checked out was Forspoken. A game that has had zero problems in announcement,
yeah.
rollout, uh-huh. social media.
Yeah.
Forspoken, a game that was announced very early on when they, I think it was actually shown as part of like the PS5 unveiling, or at least pretty close, because it was going to be a new open world action RPG with a world conceived by.
Yeah.
Rogue One writer Gary Whitta, and I believe Amy Hennig was also involved in conceptualizing this world. I believe that is the case. It's been kicking around for a while now. I will say, whenever I've seen gameplay of it, it looked like it could be cool. But did they let you play it? I guess
yes.
You know,
yes.
It's not that far off.
No, yeah, I played it. You know, I had forgotten that it was announced as a PS5 game specifically, because I had that question actually. It's like, was this meant for this console? It feels like they're trying to get like some sort of DLSS like technology to do a lot of work that it is not doing very well.
So technically speaking, the game is pretty rough.
Yeah, it The demo I played like had an open world section with like five objectives that I could like go do. I did them out of order because I like to fuck with things, and it didn't break. That's good. but like,
gotta do a little mild QA when you're at a press event.
Yeah. There's like two things about this game that are kind of off for me, and one of them is you're essentially a like. Your magic user. So you're casting a bunch of spells.
The character like falls out of our reality right. and into some magical world, and it turns out they're also hero
magic,
bound.
Now right? I do like, magic.
Yeah.
The quips aren't good. They weren't constant, but they were frequent enough that it was noticeable. But mostly it's weird. It feels like they have more things they want the character to be able to do than they have buttons to do them with, or they've like assigned buttons in a way where like they're stacking abilities on the triggers in a way that felt kind of unintuitive and strange. You basically have a couple different like sets of spells that function a little differently and have different elemental stuff. Like there's like elemental resistances playing into sometimes you'll hit an enemy with a rock and it'll be like resist and you'll have to, oh, I have to switch to my fire now. So you swap over to the other set. But
you're like swapping that on the D-pad like or something
no,
like that.
No, so you hold between R1 and then you use the left stick.
You get a spell wheel.
You get a spell wheel. You hold L1 and then you hold the right stick to the right. And you hold L1 and R1 together to swap between your fire spells and your like rock earth spells. And then L2 and R2 have spells on them. And in order to switch what spells are there, you hold L1 for the L2 spell, and then there's a magic wheel there. And then you hold R1 for the R2 spell, and there's a magic wheel there as well. However, there's also some spells that require you to hold the button to charge. And if you equip one of those and you don't hold it quite long enough, it automatically fires a faster spell instead. Like it thinks you're trying to tap it on purpose, thinking that you might be doing. So there's basically an example is here.
Oh, so like you're supposed to like hit, like if you're hitting a meter and you don't actually hit it, it's still going to produce like
something,
a weaker version of that spell.
Well, no. It's basically, let's say the fire spells. There's one fire spell that is you pull out a fire sword and do like a quick three hit combo, whack whack whack. There's also a different fire spell that is you hold it down and you throw a javelin, a fire javelin that explodes on impact. If I have the fire javelin equipped, but I don't quite hold it long enough to understand that I'm doing a hold, because either like I just tap it a little too quickly, or I think I'm holding it, but there's like my character's getting flopped around, so it's not registering the hold yet. It'll throw out the quicker one instead. It'll throw out the sword, whack, 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 because it's like, oh, you're tapping it. You want to do something, right? So it's this weird, like, contextual thing where, like, you know, it's like, why am I equipping these spells if you're going to throw out something that I don't have equipped currently? Why am I swapping in between them instead of it
when
just
you,
being
when you
like,
do that, does it interrupt? Does it take away from an AP or an MP like pool? Like,
no,
is there a negative effect, or is more just surprising that it's doing it as opposed to
the negative effect is that like these animations are like not quick, like right, like I'm now like throwing out these swords when I'm trying to throw a javelin at something flying through the air, like, and a lot of things are like, I don't know, like a lot of things move pretty quickly in the game, and like in a way where like I need to throw this javelin now because otherwise
the bird is
gonna fucking like slam into me. And instead, I'm like sitting here accidentally swiping my sword in front of my face when the bird is like dive bombing, you know?
This feels like this is a problem that was solved years ago. Like when heavy attacks, because heavy attacks used, a lot of games used to have their heavy attack on the default attack button, and it was just hold to do your heavy attack. And then it seems like pretty much the majority of the industry went, oh fuck, that's awful.
It should be a separate button. Right. Well,
maybe non-contextual buttons aren't good.
Yeah, it's like so one of the face buttons is like run, which there's like magic parkour in this game.
I was gonna say, like a huge part of the pitch of this game from the beginning was like this character out on a vast landscape and sort of like darting across huge sort of like canyon sort of like sweeping environments, and the implication there being that, you know, hey, like a key part of this game is going to be movement,
yes,
you know, and not just like getting from one, just running from one combat area to the next and the way you do in a lot of action games. And then yeah, the majority of that, the experience being strictly that, but that actually the movement, I don't think they were quite promising Assassin's Creed, but I remember like a dash looking really neat. Mm-hmm. And so I was curious how that plays into the combat flow itself, because I have to imagine that speed is at least part of what you're alluding, you know, discussing yeah, here, is that like a lot of things are happening at once. And so I'm curious how that speed transfers to the actual combat encounters.
Yeah, it feels like there's definitely, there are like alternate versions of the spells that you do if you're in speed, if you're in the like magic parkour mode. Which is also
so you're like, are you like holding X and then
this is
like contextual movement actions are happening in the way that like an Assassin's Creed yeah, character climbs a tower. So like how does that practically work out in the middle of combat then?
It doesn't, mostly because you're kind of being overrun by people and it's harder to like get into. It feels like they want this flow to happen of like they want. It feels like they're like 2/3 of the way to getting the combat flow of like the PS5, the PS4 Spider-Man games. And that mm-hmm, this is it feels like that is what they're aiming for. And they're coming coming up short in a bunch of different ways. Like first, the kind of clumsy contextual like buttons are just like not conducive to that sort of like quick rhythmic, you want to like kind of chain things together sort of combat.
Well, and even Spider-Man itself is building off of Arkham, right? In which like Arkham is a strict hit, dodge, counter.
Yes.
And then Spider-Man is playing in that same universe, but is adding all sorts of contextual events,
yes,
you know, whipping around, you know, grates and barrels and things like that. But it's building off that same lineage. And it sounds like what you're describing here is an attempt to do that with like a bigger emphasis on speed.
Yeah. And a little bit more range. I mean, even Spider-Man has like, you know, the web, there's like enough, like of a good mix of like the ranged and melee stuff in that game that makes it feel good that you can string those two things together. And this one yeah, feels like it wants you to do that, but doesn't actually, it like never comes up as like a natural flow of like, okay, I've hit this person and now I see another one over there where I could like tap the like run button, the dodge button to get my like sliding sword chop into that person or whatever, right? Like it like
mm-hmm. So the dodge is different than the parkour button, like
it's,
those
no,
are
it's the same button
actions.
No, okay, you just tap it.
So one's a tap, the one's other, a tap as opposed to a hold,
as opposed
okay,
to a hold.
Gotcha.
They continue to do this thing of like tapping and holding, and like I don't know what it is about how they've set it up where like I keep accidentally doing one or the other over the other when mm-hmm, I want to. And like what makes it weirder too is that, or not weirder, what makes it feel kind of like the game isn't responding correctly is that it's using the sort of force feedback on the PS5 controller. Where like it's harder to push down the butt, like it's not
the
just
resistance yeah,
stuff. And so like to me that reads like if I'm getting resistance from the game, that means it's reading my input, but then it won't mm-hmm, throw out what I think I'm doing. And it's like, oh no, actually, because you were like midway through a different animation, we're not actually reading this hold that you're doing for this next attack or whatever.
So is this an instance in which the way it's using the force feedback on the controller feels like it's interfering with what you're trying to do? And then absent that, if you were like, I don't know, playing with an Xbox controller on the PC, it would be less of an issue?
I'm not sure, because it's like mostly that's just like a read of like what I think the game, but it doesn't seem like the force feedback is actually doing anything. It's just like always on instead of it being
okay,
like reactive.
I know that I remember when I played Returnal, that game had the way by default it was like on the controller.
Yeah,
I'm forgetting the exact specifics, but like essentially it was like, hey, if you like press down lightly it does one shot, if you press down hard it does like with more force it did an alternate shot. And like, I just could not, like it felt so uncomfortable to hold the controller, and there was just an alternate way of doing it,
right?
It was just like, and if you don't want to deal with this like this physical feedback to change, you know, and I couldn't tell like, is this me just being
right,
a curmudgeon in the way that I also like chafe against, like, you know, not motion controls, but you know, like what's the one that Splatoon has, the Gyro controls, right? Like, am I just being old, or like, do I just think this doesn't doesn't work? And so I'd be curious, you know, when this game actually comes out, yeah, and you have more time with it, like to figure out, like to parse out where that friction is coming from.
It's weird because it's just like it's always on. It's not actually providing feedback. It just feels like it is providing feedback. But like every time you press the button, it's got that thing on it, that resistance on it, even if the game is not actually taking in your input at the moment. There's a lot of like very kind of like flashy animations when you're in run mode, where you like jump over like rocks and shit, and you're doing like parkour flips and all that. And like a lot of times during those moments, like if I like did one of those parkour flips over like an enemy and then tried to attack them, nothing would like it wouldn't register the button hits in midair, even though there are attacks that are different if you're doing them from midair. And it's just, it feels a lot like they, I don't know, like almost like they like made these animations like too much of a priority in the like how inputs are taken in. Like there's no way to interrupt some of these things, but it feels like if the idea is speed and kind of flow, like it should allow.
Right, it feels clunky compared to you know, not to always invoke Souls, but like that is part of that is like, hey, big long animations, but it's intrinsic to the the flow of the combat, and you learn to
it doesn't feel wrong. It doesn't feel against like the intent of the combat. Like it's like, look, do these cool like attacks. And yeah, it's like you were saying earlier, it's like a Arkham or a Spider-Man where like you can kind of like flip between enemies and all that, and like it seems to want to let you do that, but doesn't really accomplish it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, and it also looks weird. It definitely looks like it's strange. It looks like I don't know if it's actually DLSS, but it looks like it's one of those like they're.
I don't
trying
think it can
to...
be. I think there's been. No, yeah. I believe the PS5 and Xbox hardware is capable of having something. I'm speaking slightly out of my ass here, but like it is possible for those to some version of that to become part of the current generation of consoles. Right. But that is not something that currently exists or is being taken advantage of by developers.
It's like one of those like we're kind of faking certain parts of this, and then as they like pop in or pop out, it looks like extra like pixely sort of. It's weird. It's like sometimes it gets really sharp, and then sometimes it like there's too much happening and it totally falls out.
Interesting.
I don't think I've seen another game do it is the weird thing. Like I'm not sure what like engine they're using or like what the like particle like stuff that they're using is, but it looks off. It looks like it's a PC game that's been downsampled for a console.
It is using the Luminous engine, which is their in-house
the square thing.
Did Final Fantasy move to Unreal? Was that I can't remember if that was built in that or not. One last thing about Forspoken, just because we mostly focused on the combat, but it's obviously also meant to be like a very story heavy game. Like, do you any indication that seems, obviously the trailers like and the quips like that could be a victim of like bad marketing that's like packaging this stuff incorrectly, thinking they're trying to be funny. And so did you glean anything from the time you spent that there's like more going on in the story and the world that like could grab you beyond sort of like the marketing that's kind of fallen flat on its current pitch?
Unfortunately, no. The quips were there and the quips were frequent.
But that's an action. That's in combat, like, right? So I guess I'm just sort of trying to glean outside of where, of course, there are going to be the quips, which is in combat when they're trying to spice up the like the actions of the character.
But like even like when you would like reach a story beat of like, oh, we found this. Here's a magical MacGuffin. Like the tone of that doesn't change at all. It's all the same kind of like weird quippy writing that I don't know. It, like there weren't actually any like long cutscenes in this section that I saw. So it was mostly like open world type, like, we're going to have some lines of dialogue about something that we found in the world, but there weren't any, like, big, quote-unquote, story beats. So, like, that part is hard to tell. Like, it, but, like, yeah, the writing didn't, it is what the marketing says it is, actually. And it's just, like, it's not for me. Some people think that stuff's funny. Like, fine. Go with God. But I'm not one of those people, I guess.
I'm with a go with God.
I mean, I don't know how much, like, Amy Hennig was involved in, like, the script writing process. Like, I mean, some of that, you know, you could see a lineage out of Uncharted and things like that, like, arriving at a place with Forspoken.
Right. Like, there, maybe, but the overarching narrative is a little more interesting, but, like, we didn't get really much of a peek at that in the demo that we played.
Okay.
I will say that it is entirely possible that some of this might flow a tiny bit better in the game itself when you're introduced to things in a certain order. Sometimes that can help unlock the
right,
sort of,
same,
like,
with the combat, right?
Yeah,
like,
that, this is
intrinsically the difficulty of,
because they, like, gave us,
know,
a
game shown off this way. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like a late game, like, have basically everything unlocked. Here are some of the combos, do them. And even in that, it's just like, did not feel particularly
right,
fun.
All right. Well, that recently got delayed. That is next.
Oh yeah.
Well, like, I mean, recently, like, in the, like, yeah, it's been delayed a couple times. It was supposed to come out this spring, if I recall right, correctly. Now it is coming out January 24th, 2023, in an increasingly crowded January, February,
yep,
March, in which some things are going to have to inevitably slip, unless they want to hit for the financial quarter, or the fiscal year ending, which for a lot of folks is the end of March.
Quick thing, according to this Wikipedia article, it is coming to PC, which has me wondering whether
it's
not
PC, PS5. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like some of the, like, flashier things might just have been like, we can do this on the computer, but the PS5 is actually struggling a little bit. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, and also, you know, those optimizations come really late in the process.
Yes.
So we'll have to cross our fingers that stuff gets worked out, so at least we can judge the game on merits other than the characters popping in looks gross. So yeah, January 24th, 2023. Very quickly before we cut to a break, I finished Return to Monkey Island, an absolute delight of a video game. Truly sublime writing, story, like, a more emotional heft than I expected. It really is like two creators coming back to something that meant a lot to them many, many years ago, and bringing, like, the weight of those years to the storytelling, but not in a way that is like, it's a sad, like, time to make the sad Monkey Island game. It's not that, but it's more, you can feel the weight of time on it, and they bring that to bear in the storytelling, in the characterizations, and it's just, it's really good. It's the pacing of the puzzles is excellent. I only consulted the hint guide two or three times and never to fully solve a puzzle. They were all excellently written to just give me gentle prods in the right direction when I, like, just wasn't clicking on what I should do next. But broadly speaking, the game flows extremely well. It's a lot of fetch quests, and that gets a little samey towards the end during a particular sequence of fetchy quests, but the writing was always so good, the characterization was always so good, the worlds were so good that it didn't matter. And, like, that's, frankly, these days what I want out of one of these games is to be just mildly challenged. I just want a tiny bit of friction. I don't want a ton of friction on the way towards experiencing the world and kind of poking around. There is, like, a really, the game does have a hard mode that has puzzles, extra puzzles. And you don't, for the vast majority of the game, you have no understanding of what those are. Like, it's not like the game is signposting, like, hey, pussy, like, here are the puzzles you're missing out on because you didn't want to play on hard mode. Kato's video feed turns into a, Kato, your webcam is dying.
Oh, yeah. I look fine on my end.
Well, what if I told you that was not the case for everyone else?
Nice.
It's honestly concerning that you think this looks fine. If someone looked at me while they looked like this and said, I look fine on my end, I would be like, well, you have become disconnected from reality.
It's sort of, for a little while, it looked like an old TV, like the when you would like change channels where there was nothing there and you get all the gray static and colors. That's what you looked like.
Amazing.
There was one sequence in Return to Monkey Island where I was finishing up one puzzle, but then talked to somebody about, can I become part of your, they alluded to this club you could become a part of. And you can ask, can I be part of the club? And I forget, it was the game or a character prompts up and says like, hey, there's a bunch of things you can do to get into this club. You don't need to do it. You do not need to get in the club to advance. If you want to do them, you can. You have found this puzzle, but it's cool. You could just keep going forward and we're not going to require this. And so it like reveals, I like found one of the layers of, oh, here is something that would have been a requirement to get to the end game in on hard mode. But here I've just sort of stumbled into it and can still, it's still present. I can go find those objects, piece that together, become part of that club. But I don't need whatever MacGuffin object that the game would require of me on the harder mode. And so it's just really, really exquisitely well designed from top to bottom. And the ending in particular is like really interesting and an emotional way that I was not expecting from a new Monkey Island game. So
nice.
Cannot recommend more highly. It is really, really worth visiting. And I think even if you have not played a Monkey Island game before, like this would be a good entryway into the rhythm and flow of it. And then you could very easily go back to the older ones and drop into those. So as we turn to Monkey Island, we're going to take a quick break, come back, talk a few more video games.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And we're back. We're doing some more cleanup on Steam Next Fest demos. One that I know, Ren, you found particularly striking and interesting. Some of the praise you put upon this demo was, if the hyperbole matches what is in here, makes me very excited to learn more about what is happening. So please tell me about Season.
So let me be real clear. I do not think I am hyperbolizing what I say, the thing that I'm saying. I think that Season may end up being one of my favorite video games.
Not of the year.
No, full stop. And I just want to get ahead of this and say that in, I believe, 2000 and earlier this year, a piece came out by, I believe, Rebecca Valentine about the game's developer, the lead developer on Season, the studio was on their previous game, and a founder of the studio, Davro, is an asshole, and it's like a creep. He owns the studio, is not supposed to have that much creative influence on Season, but that is currently in the air, because apparently he did start working on the project. So I just want to be clear. Game made by an asshole at a studio that has been tumultuous, to say the least, in the last few years.
Yeah, there's if people want to read more about it, you're right. It was by Rick Valentine, published in January of 2021. It's over at Games Industry Biz. The headline is Scavenger Studio Creative Director Accused of Belittling, Screaming at, Groping Employees. The deck is current and former employees of Season Studios say Simon Darvaux's toxic actions were enabled by its co-owner. So if you want to read more details about what exactly happened there, make sure and seek that out.
Yeah. All of this is to say that Season is probably some of the most excited I've been about a video game in a really long time. The game is premised by you are leaving a small, isolated community up in some mountains. And as you leave this community, you are going through to catalog what is effectively framed as the end of the world. The season, which is a not just like a you know weather phenomenon, but a ontological phenomenon, is changing, and you are there to document the end of the age. And so you go around and you take photos of things. You you have a camera, you have a microphone, and you have a journal that you can fill with pictures, sketches, and little phrases that pop into your character's head as they try and catalog the world that they have lived in.
How is that visualized in terms of like, is this like, you encounter something and then the game just plugs that in? Are you like, do you have any sort of agency over
you
like
have
what's being written down?
Over what's being written down, the character will say phrases and it adds them to a book of phrases that you can write down. So the writing is probably the most buttoned up part of it. But the other thing is you can just pull out your audio recorder and record quite literally any sound. One of the things that I did before leaving the village was I pulled out the audio recorder and I just turned that shit on and it captured the ambient noise of the wind blowing and like the specific ambient noise in one spot of this map. And I was like, I think this character would want to gather just 30 seconds of the background radiation of the place that she is from.
And this isn't sort of like, hey, here's a checklist of seven things you got to do in this village before you go. This is you sort of role-playing what you think the character would want. Like, what is the relationship between the abilities that you have and what the game is like asking you to do?
It's right in the middle of those two things.
Okay.
So basically, there are some things where the game has particular things it wants you to do. For example, there is a doctor who founded the town, or who did not found the town, but who basically became its de facto ruler and made the town what it is, right? You go through the world and you see murals, and the game is like, listen, before you go, take pictures of these murals, they're important. And you go through, you take pictures of the mural, and you put them in your sketchbook. But there is also other pages where it's like, okay, here is what the character will comment on. So like, here is how full you are in terms of stuff in this particular area that your character will specifically address. And you have a little bit of insight into that, but you don't know what it is. It's not like the game is telling you, hey, here is what they care about. It is like, oh, cool. So like at one point I walked past a coffee shop that has poetry nights and my character was like, oh, my dad used to do poetry nights here. And said that to herself. And I was like, oh, I bet if I take a picture of this, there will be some additional information. And I got additional information. I was able to like get that photo. Right. And so other things the game doesn't highlight for you at all. For example, the sound of fresh water running through a fountain. If you record the sound of water fountains in this particular town, your character will tell you about the like a little bit about the like water filtration system. Right. It is pretty varied in terms of what you're learning about and in terms of what the character actually like pays attention to. And so you are it's a mix between the role playing heavy. I'm going to do whatever I want and really get into this character, which is how I was playing the game, and a little bit more structured like movement through a given space. It reminds me actually a lot of Umurangi Generation. Is I would say the comparison point for what it is asking you to do. It's basically that each area has a couple things it wants you to do. And once you do those, you become familiar enough with the area to be able to go back through it and be artistically expressive and be like, oh, cool. I bet as I'm going through this place, oh, I bet a picture of that would look really good in the scrapbook. And on the actual journal, that is where the game is just like letting you do whatever the fuck you want. Do you want to make a little itty bitty picture and put it in the journal? Do you want to make a big picture and put it in the journal? Do you want to turn it at a 45 degree angle? How you connect information and the narrative you are building is really interesting. And the game makes it clear that your history will be incomplete and you are not crafting a catalog. You are crafting a particular narrative of the end of this world. And so, like, in the first village, I chose to really latch on to the narrative of the relationship between your player character and their best friend. And I was like, okay, how can I find a way to use these photos as the, like, connective tissue between two sentences that are technically unrelated but feel thematically related to this, like, moving on sensation? And so you're doing this really cool collage work that is, it's engaging. I love it a lot. It feels like a development on what I really loved about Umurangi Generation and pushing all of those things a little bit further with a significantly higher budget. Also, the game is fucking gorgeous.
I was just going to say, I was looking at some screenshots. It's very striking. Also, I have to ask, how is the bicycling?
I did not see the bicycling.
No,
it,
okay.
I know, right. I'm sorry. But it looks
okay.
Great.
It's all right. I it's such a unique mode of travel that you don't see in many video games. Like, yeah. The only time you see a bike is when, I don't know, like, you're playing a GTA or an open world game, and it's like, yeah, and you can also ride a bike. And I like that, like, the main mode of travel in this game from, like, one place to the next is this character riding a bike, which is just neat.
Yeah, it's sick. I think I really love it a lot. It immediately gripped me. It feels like... It feels genuinely exciting. Like, playing it made me very excited to see where it goes. And yeah, I'm pretty thrilled after playing it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, that is a season, a letter to the future. You know, similar sort of thing happening with this and, you know, the new game from the studio behind Gone Home. The name of that escapes me. But when the best you can hope for when studios go through challenges like this is that hopefully the many folks that work under the folks who suck are able to take control of that project, make it their own, and if they choose to stay and want to make it their own, are able to do so successfully. And so I'm rooting that that studio is better and that those people were able to find that agency and make this something special in the end, because it sounds really, really neat. I missed the wind. Oh, you know what? I did download that demo and I didn't delete it, so I still can play it, I think, before.
Yes. I would recommend it.
Because Steam Next Fest is technically over, I think. That ended on Sunday. And that says coming soon. So we don't know exactly when that's coming, but probably, I would guess, sometime first half of next year.
It was supposed to be fall of 2022.
Oh, okay. So sometime early next year, probably.
Yeah.
Cool. The last game we're going to talk about today on a shorter pod, because we have a shorter week and many things going on, is a game that I'm being told was weekends hours have been lost to. we should maybe not speak of the fact that it can be played on mobile devices because it may cause further issues. But it's a game
Android
called Slice and Dice. Just what, Android?
Just Android for now. Just because I did try to go download it and it was not.
Okay. I gotcha. Slice and Dice. What is Slice and Dice? Who wants to start?
I mean,
who's been more cursed by it?
I think
I'm more cursed. I can tell you with confidence.
I did. Well, it was 4 hours starting at 11, which is not great. Right? It's one of those, like, okay, I was gonna get ready for bed. Here's a quick game that I can, like, check in on for, like, half an hour to an hour, and then did not stop playing for another three.
I put probably 10 or 12 hours in it this game over the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I just heard about it late. I was like, oh, what is everyone playing over here?
And literally, literally late.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. It's something. It may be one of my new favorite roguelikes. It is crazy good.
Yeah.
The basic premise of Slice and Dice is that you have a party of five adventurers, all of whom are defined by the sides on a six-sided die that they have access to. So you roll your six-sided die, and basically whatever that character does is determined by what side their die lands on. So, for example, the ranger has four die sides with something on it, and then two blanks where they do nothing. So two of the sides are do one damage, range to an enemy, and cleave. So it hits the three people near them as well, right? Another one is deal 2 damage, ranged, engage. And engage does double damage to a full health enemy, right? And so each of these characters has a unique, basically, sides to their die that they are rolling, some of which are way more, like, interesting and engaging than others. Like, some of which are, like, way more involved than others. And then the enemies also have this same combat system where they are rolling their own die with 6 bespoke sides. And basically, you're Yahtzeeing it, where you're like, roll the die. I'm going to take these ones. These are the good die. The ones that you don't want, you re-roll. And you keep going. Certain die trigger when they get rolled, and so you want to re-roll them over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of different... They are really pushing the amount of ways that die can interact with each other in a way that I find really engaging.
Yeah, it... It's really spectacular in its presentation too, of just like after you kind of go through a very short tutorial, it makes a lot of kind of intuitive sense as to what's happening. You see the like which people are being attacked is kind of shown through like their health being a different color, because it's like this is how much damage you're gonna take. But as you kind of like clear enemies out or like change the board state, like that updates, and it's just like very easy to kind of grasp in a way where there's like a lot of shit going on, right? Like you've got 5 characters on your side, and the other side usually like can vary between like just a couple of goblins to like, I once fought a lich that had like 5 skeletons on their side. And it has a very well designed efficiency of like the way it presents its data that kind of like makes it all fall away to like, okay, I'm rolling these dice, I'm making these choices. As Ren mentioned, you Yahtzee it, but to be more specific as to what that is like, you can choose specific ones to hold on to, and just the like, because a lot of these die have like, you know, they'll be like 2 sides are like, it's a 1 damage attack. It's a 1 damage attack. And then there's that one side that's like, but this side does 3 damage. And you're always just like, what if I could get that 3 damage side?
3 damage side? Oh, oh fuck.
Fuck. Should I just leave it out there? I have the guaranteed 1. Should I hold it?
I hate that Cyclops so much. I fucking hate that Cyclops. I want to beat the brakes off of his ass. And yet.
Yeah. And there's a couple other like standard RPG like mechanics of like, there's like a front line and a back line, and if there's people still in the front line, you can't attack the back line. So like there's ranged characters that will really fucking can do some fucking damage. So like you really want to figure out either having a ranged character, or if you don't, like you gotta kind of rush down the people in the front line. Another thing that's interesting is that when your characters level up, you don't get, it's not like a kind of traditional RPG where you're like putting any points into stats or like you're picking a class. You get a choice of like a random choice of like 2 of your characters could level up. Here's the class that they could level up into. And those are randomized. So like sometimes you're making choices based on like, well, I don't want the healer to turn into that, so I'll pick this fighter upgrade instead. Even if the fighter, I was hoping to get a different kind of class. And the classes are very distinct and interesting. I got a really fun, I think it was called the... I'm trying to remember what the name of the class is. But it was a very interesting class where like all it had was like 2 huge attacks that did like, it was like 6 damage, but then like on the next turn you couldn't do anything. Yeah. Which was really fun. And like the ways that the magic can kind of go is really interesting. You have items that you can equip that gives you different you can kind of fuck with different sides. Most of them is what they do. Some of them also give you like different little stat boots, but like really it's like, I had a thief once. The thief is kind of rough to begin with because they have
so bad.
Yeah, well, but they're also very good because they have ranged attacks from the go, right? And But there's only like what, one or two of the sides are ranged attacks?
They have one ranged attack and then two melee attacks, and that's it. And so you have a 50% chance every roll of getting jack just shit.
Jack shit. The thief doesn't do anything. The thief is hiding that turn. But then I got, I found a like bow that changed to the top. The way they do it is interesting. They basically splay out the dice. So like there's a center square, a top square, bottom left square, and then two squares to the right. And all of the like upgrades for your dice, all the items that you can use on those dice kind of place things in different areas. So it's not like there's like those choices become more interesting than just like, oh, this is always going to be a good upgrade no matter what. Like I got one that was like the center block becomes +2 mana. And I had that on my mage for a long time because it was really good. But then my mage like leveled up and like the center block was actually a very powerful spell. And I was like, shit, I really wish I could put this anywhere else on the dice. But the fact that it has to be in a specific spot just makes those decisions a little more interesting to make.
One thing I saw when I was reading up on the game, like one of the notes is that, they undo actions as much as you like each turn is like a mini puzzle.
Yes. Yeah.
How unique is that? I mean, both of you are much more familiar with it. Like, is that like unique that you were given an opportunity to treat it as though you can go up to the precipice of a choice and then come back?
Infinite undos are very rare.
Yeah.
I would say like usually they will limit them. And this game is actually like very kind because, well, it has to be like this because eventually you're getting to the point where you are fighting, say, for example, 7 gnolls and a snake simultaneously. And it's like, okay, cool. I have to do every single turn of this basically perfectly or I am going to die. A lot of games that don't let you go back and fix things, you don't need to as much versus this one where it's like, ah, fuck, I misplaced this one variable. And so now I have to completely reset my whole turn and do it in a completely different order.
And to be clear, the thing that you have a set number of rerolls of the dice. You can't undo rerolls. The dice rolling is always locked in. What you can do is choose a different order of operations for each of those attacks or whatever the die side that came up is.
So you can see the attacks play, like, in theory, that what they will play out of, like, how much damage you're doing, who's dying. But you can set those all up before hitting execute and then and come back.
Yeah, you can go through and be like, oh, actually, it would be a better order of operations for me to put 2 shield on the berserker before he attacks the spiker, which does damage back at you. So I should do it in that order instead of just having it attack up front. Things like that is like, and then like, yeah, it. I feel like I haven't seen all of the each time I play it. There's a new class I've never. Like
there's
100
with. Total.
There's like it's so many, and so like having played it 4 hours straight into like the very very late at night, after thinking I would be able to peek in at it, like I was getting obviously still getting new classes every single time, and it's just so engaging.
I mean, the game advertises having 100 classes. So,
yeah.
Not shocking that you were constantly running into new ones. Well, this is cool. Slice and Dice.
Very neat.
This seems really neat. Hopefully it comes sick. To iOS at some point. Although there is Windows and Mac versions.
You can play it. I was playing on
computers of choice.
I was playing on desktop. So, but I would love it on a phone. Fuck. That's so good.
it's really good on a phone. I laid in bed last night and I was like, you know what? I think I'm just going to chill and play Slice and Dice for like a few hours while listening to a podcast about Cuba.
Nice.
I was listening to Blowback.
I wanted to bring up kind of, I don't know if you saw any of this, but people had some clarifications on Moonbreaker, a game we talked about quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
on last week's pod. Let me pull up one thing I just wanted to point out too. Oh, so we have like Chris McMullen on Twitter say, I agree this is a model that can be abused, but right now it's fair. Outside of paying for the game, I've spent $0 and have every unit. They give you a bunch of free boosters to start. You can use a fair price of in-game currency to buy more boosters. For every dupe you get, you can get currency to either buy a unit you don't have or upgrade a unit's rarity, which only impacts cosmetics. Certainly is something to keep an eye on as it could go bad, but right now you can complete the new player objectives and have enough boosters and currency to own 90% plus of the units and gain the rest after a few more hours of play.
Well, that's the trick. The boosters aren't free, right? You're paying into the founders at the moment, so you get 10 boosters. That's technically what you're buying, quote unquote, to get into the early access. But when it goes free to play and launches at 1.0, those boosters are not likely to be around for new players, right? They haven't said definitively whether or not, but like right now they're presenting those boosters as this is what you're putting money in for, is that you're buying the boosters up front.
Okay. We'll do a quick dip into the question bucket. You can write in at gamingadvice.com with the topic questions. I wanted to read this. It was a good question, also kind of a touching note. So this is a little bit of a longer one, but this comes in from Landon. Dear Waypoint Whackpackers.
Hey, what the fuck does that mean, bro? Hey, whoa. Répétez-vous?
Long-time listener, and before my question, I want to say I've discovered you guys about 5 years ago living in Korea when I was first getting into podcasts. The game podcasts I've come to find, yours are the one I've listened to the longest, either due to interest waning on others and more frequently, sadly, them not surviving. RIP Fanbite. I've been endlessly impressed by how all you've been able to keep that Waypoint Whack Packer energy, even as some Keystone Packers have dropped.
Bro, what the fuck are you doing?
What are the words coming out?
I love the energy of this. In Korea, I lived right beside a great hiking spot in a mountain base. And listening to the pods and doing that long hike became my morning routine in the middle of the week and at the beginning of the weekend. I've since had to return to the States, stuck deep in rural Tennessee, having to take the role of caretaker of elderly family members. The adjustment has been a hard and sobering one for a lot of reasons. My grandmother passed away last month after a year and a half bout with pancreatic cancer. The podcast has been such a comfort constant to me in what has been a trying and unexpected time in my life. I try not to fall into weird parasocial connection fans sometimes have. We have never met, most likely will never meet. Even if we did, I imagine we probably won't get along anyway. I mean, stand up for yourself, Landon. I think
you're going to dunk on yourself that hard, I promise.
We're not that cool. I'm not nearly smart enough to hang out with you Packers. Oh, my God. But I want to let you know all that I appreciate what you do as someone who will most likely be lost to space and time in one of the worst of the flyover states.
Go Packers.
Moving on to my question. I am curious about where everyone on the pod stands on physical media at this point. I know as journalists, you get digital codes for games, so I assume you get very few, if any, physical games. But what about other mediums? I don't think of myself as a purist, but I always find myself getting physical when possible. I don't really have anything against digital. When the option is digital only, I don't have an issue buying something that way. I also have multiple streaming service subscriptions. Yet, I still buy physical media pretty frequent, whether it be games, films, books, or even CDs, when I find I really enjoy something. I bet I'll be getting Nope on 4K when it hits, for instance. Yes, you and me both.
Hell yeah.
Or if it's an artist I follow, such as pre-ordering every Murakami book as soon as I can from a cozy bookstore in my old college town. I guess it's old school, or at least feels old school. DVD releases of shows and movies come later and later, if they come at all at some point. And most people I know buy almost no practical media outside of games. I've even heard speculation that Sony and Microsoft could do away with disc drives in their systems at some point in the not-so-distant future. Have you all completely foregone the physical in all mediums and gone in all digital? I'm especially curious what the newest and youngest Whackpacker thinks here, is I feel like Ren grew up at a time when digital access started to become more the norm and physical media began its decline with the masses. Was there ever a point in her life when she got physical media as a means of pure necessity and not just as a collectible thing? I'm genuinely curious. Thanks for all you do and keep that Waypoint Whackpacker energy
what
going.
Landon,
I just,
what does it
look,
mean?
Here's what I'll say, is that sometimes when people attempt this, they throw it out there, it doesn't work, and they just want to hear it read, and they know it's fuck. An L. Fuck. I love that, the commitment to the bit, because it got funnier as it went along.
I'm all bought in. Listen,
welcome to a safe point, more pack. Like whack point. Well, let's start with you, Ren. What is these days your relationship with physical media? You know, not just games, but just sort of broadly, how do you feel about collecting things that are the things that you play, listen, watch?
I'm a big physical book. I'm a big physical book person. I love me a physical book a lot. It's better for my mental illness, addled little brain. I love a hardcover book. Actually, sometimes I will just go out and rebuy books I already own if they have really gorgeous. I found a particularly gorgeous copy of I found a particularly gorgeous copy of Foucault's The History of Sexuality, Volume 2, that was stunning. And I was like, this is pretty enough. I'm willing to drop $40 on this. And so I'm big into buying physical media if it's books. When it comes to like games, I like the idea. It's just not particularly like viable because most of it is like those collector's editions or like limited run physical games, and like that style of it just doesn't work for me. There are a few games where I would really want it. Disco Elysium, I've considered it because that game is extremely important to me. But earlier in my life, of course, I got physical media. Like when I was growing up and playing games, I was like, got Game Boy games. The first Game Boy I actually got was a hand-me-down because two family friends who worked in a national park, and this is the most Renata origin story possible, showed up at my house one day for like my family and were like, hey, these are two lesbian women who work in a national park, and they were like, hey, some kid left a Game Boy and quite literally like two dozen games, and they never recovered it all summer. We are giving it to you now. So kind of prophetically, a bunch of cool lesbians gave me a hand-me-down GBA. And so I do love a GBA cartridge very, very much. But yeah, that is my physical media relationship.
Yeah, for me, don't have a lot of interest in like coveting games physically. It's also just not something I don't revisit a lot of older games. And so like practically speaking, doesn't make a lot of sense for me. And also just the advent of things like emulation. It's just like, if I want to revisit something, there are easier ways to do that than to pull it off of a shelf and play it on the original hardware or anything like that. And also just, I think similar to you, Ren, like so horror movies are what I like to collect. Like that is the expansive collection that I now need an Excel spreadsheet for, not because I have thousands, but I have just enough that the way I usually collect them is like when Target will do like a 2-for-1 sale on like Blu-rays, or they'll be like, I buy one, get one like half off. And like, that's when I'll go buy a handful of them. And I'm usually ranking them from price, like lowest to highest. Oftentimes that is where I'm finding a lot of like weird 60s, 70s, and 80s like Blu-rays that you can find for like $6. And then if I spend like on these Target sales, like I only have to spend $30 or $40, and I can get like 10 movies. But now I think like four times had a package show up, and then I go to put it on the shelf, and I'm like, oh, that's already there. I fucked up. Like I already bought that for $5 on a previous sale. And so now I need to make an Excel spreadsheet so I can check that before I cash in on some sale that's going on. But for me, it's like I rewatch horror films all the time. It's very meaningful to me and my wife in terms of our relationships and our interests. And it's one of those things that as I've said before on this podcast, it's all displayed very prominently on a shelf, like in our family room, so that you will see that adorned with a bunch of other figures and things like that. It's like very much, you cannot look at that and not come away with, oh, like this is a shelf that reflects the personality of this family in some way. And so that's that for me, that's the one that I go out of my way to collect things on in an environment where otherwise I don't really collect things. The other, I do collect like every Stephen King book that comes out. I will pick up the like the big version of that. I don't need no paperback. I like the big obnoxious book that barely fits in a bag. And so I've gotten into that where like I like when the library sales happen locally, and I'll go there and just like, I'll go to the horror section and just buy 5 or 6 books, and those get added to a shelf. And these days people are getting purging their physical media to such a degree that it's really benefiting me, because you go to like these library sales and you can buy tons of movies for just bargain bin prices, because people are just tossing them out. And it's like, I don't know that I needed Scream 4. I don't have the other ones, but I'll pay $1.50 for it. So I'll get the other ones when Target does their sale later. So that's where I'm at for me. Like, horror films especially is where physical is important. And then I also draw a distinction between like, I've slowly over time mostly replaced the DVDs with Blu-rays of the equivalent films. But then I have a certain hierarchy, which is like, I don't need the 4K of The Nest, which is just an obscure, like, a bug-filled horror film. I don't need the 4K re-release of that. But like Halloween, the original, is one of like an all-time classic. Like, that I do want to own in 4K. So like, right, selectively, I will then replace those with like the ultra discs, which I've really done for a handful of things: Jaws, Halloween, and some others I need to get to. But and then I had sort of like have like a disc hierarchy of ones that I'm willing to pay a premium to replace to have the highest fidelity for. So, but then it all comes blaring out of a shitty TCL soundbar in my my upstairs. That I'm, when I saw their news reports this week that the supply chain shit, where and then people being at home has forced companies like Target, Walmart, Amazon to buy way too many electronics and other things, anticipating a demand that is no longer there. Mm-hmm. And the reason there is already holiday sales happening this week, and that those sales are only going to get like increasingly brutal for the companies that stock this stuff, I will at least be able to replace that soundbar with something more meaningful later this year. But Kato, where are you at with the physical realm?
I mean, before I got this job, I would buy everything possible. But like, that's been a losing battle, especially in games, you know, since Steam became a thing. I don't know, like, I have a physical copy of Mass Effect 3 for the PC, which I think might be the last time I got a physical copy.
Gotta keep
copy.
That one around.
I'm pretty
you
sure
never know.
I'm pretty sure it's not even a physical copy. I'm pretty sure it's a box that had a Steam code.
A code?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems right.
I remember buying the box and being like, yes, I am getting a physical copy of this game. And then opening the box and being like, oh no, I am not getting a physical copy of this game.
Well, and especially for PC stuff, especially as nobody owned Blu-ray. It was very rare to have a Blu-ray drive in a PC. So then it became increasingly weird to be producing, like, what are you going to put this on, 7 DVDs?
Right.
You know?
And like, I wish, I don't know. I have, like, most of my Switch collection is physical because they still make fucking cartridges, which I enjoy.
I feel like it's very common for a lot of people who've, like, probably gotten out of the physical game for a lot of consoles, but not for
the Switch.
The Switch.
Yeah, they're just so tasty.
Jesus. God damn it.
I'm gonna put that in my Halloween candy for the block. Hey, kids.
Look.
Eat this copy of Mega Man 10 or whatever I have laying around.
No, I don't want to. And like, movies, I think similarly, is one of the last places where I still get physical media, because it's still being made in a way that I can access. It's usually just like, no, we should own this. Like, I'm going to get a, like, there's like a small list of like, this movie was good enough, we will rewatch it. And things like in the last like 2 years, for example, I think I have I'm going to get a copy of The Green Knight and Everything Everywhere All at Once are two movies that I think I would like to rewatch at some point and don't want to like rent to stream. And like, are also like, specifically The Green Knight is, I mean, both of those movies actually are very visually intense, and like,
Green Knight is so fucking good.
The stream is not.
We really fucked up by not doing a podcast about The Green Knight.
Yeah, we did. It's so fucking good. The streaming quality is still not there, even with like 4K streaming. Like, it fucking,
especially the ultra discs. I feel like the difference between like a real, like, Like the stuff on like Apple stuff tends to be like really, really good when you rent it. And I don't see a huge difference between the, like a decent Blu-ray and that, but the difference between even that and an ultra, like a proper 4K disc is like, you, even I can tell, especially if it's a movie you care about.
Yes. Yes. Especially like those type of movies that are very, visually like dense, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, again, you can send in additional questions to gamingadvice.com. You can send in, if you want to send in questions for the next sports podcast, you can also do that by gamingadvice.com with the title Sports.
Sports?
We may do one this week, but I'm worried that Rob and I will not have time. So we're trying to figure out when the next one of that is going to be, exactly, because we will have SafePoint next week, which is just as good of a time to also mention to you again that SafePoint will be happening next week. More details to come on charity and all things of that nature. But broadly speaking, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 10 to 6, lots of shenanigans, lots of maybe we'll order good pizza this time. But then
you missed it. We got good pizza last time.
We did get pizza last time. Yeah,
it was really good.
Yeah, but it was really when good. I'm exerting my creative control over the project, I must drag us down into the mud. And so even if we got good pizza, we would have to get something else. I don't know what that is. I'm going to work that. I mean, ideas, please. Please write into gamingadvice.com with the suggestion. Gross.
And, what should we eat?
Let me know what you think. That's going to be a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. If you want more from Waypoint, you can follow us on Twitter at Waypoint, on Facebook, YouTube at Waypoint Advice, on Twitch, twitch.tv/Waypoint. This podcast is brought to you ad-free if you're a subscriber at waypointplus.com. This week, we will have, for Waypoint Plus subscribers, the My Turn episode of Escape from New York. You voted.
Yeah.
We potted. We escaped to New York. And then you will learn what movie we're watching next, I guarantee.
you will never
guarantee. You cannot guess where we're going next. And that's not even like, oh, Patrick, you love to troll everybody. Like, no, this is
the
wheel is turning in a different direction and it's going towards Rob. And Rob could have done the Rob pick. He told us the Rob pick, and then he went in a different direction, which is a joy, and I cannot wait to watch that probably after Save Point. So you want to find out what that is, you can do that sooner by subscribing over at waypointplus.com. You can also read what we're writing when we get time to write over at waypointadvice.com. I recently did a feature on finally closing the loop on Chain Shop Braden Moore, someone I've been writing about for 6 years at Waypoint. Almost the entirety of the time I have been here, I've been writing about this Twitch streamer who has been trying to beat their own impossible level in Super Mario Maker. They have spent more than 4,000 hours in 6 years doing it. And so I checked in with Braden after finally nailing their accomplishment on being that level. So you can check that out on the website. And maybe we'll have other stuff later this week. Until then, you can follow me at Patrick Klepek. Kato, where can we follow you?
At @A_Kato_appears.
And Ren.
You can follow me on Twitter at Ren or Raven.
And lastly, our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can learn more at waypoint.zone/Bowen. That's us calling time on this podcast. We'll talk to you again. Maybe later this, we got to figure out the pod schedule. There might not actually be another one this week, and then that'll just show up on Monday so that we have a pod a week. So
everyone be chill. It's weird around here right now.
And you're going to get a lot of cool shit next week, so it's fine. Fuck capitalism. Go home.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.